The Grand Resort Hotels of the White Mountains, Architecture, History, and Personalities by Bryant F. Tolles, Jr. For over a century, beginning about 1850, the Grand Resort Hotel was, for many Americans, the vital symbol of summertime leisure and recreation. While this era and its attendant lifestyle for most people has long passed, it still inspires great fascination and interest, as well as a powerful sense of nostalgia. This essay examines one of the United States' major resort regions, the White Mountains of New Hampshire, and in this geographical context, the phenomenon of the Grand Resort Hotel, its architecture, its related history, and associated personalities. As a prelude to a survey of the White Mountain region, it is important to take a brief look at the concept of the Grand Hotel. What is meant by the use of this term? In Webster's new 20th century dictionary, the word grand is exhaustively defined in the following manner. Great, imposing because of size, beauty, and extent. Magnificent, handsome and luxurious, characterized by splendor and display. Illustrious, majestic, superb, exalted, distinguished, dignified, important. Pretentious, complete and comprehensive. The American Heritage Dictionary College Edition cites the following synonyms for grand. Magnificent, imposing, stately, majestic, august, and grandiose. What a powerful word indeed. These synonyms very aptly and precisely characterize the Grand Hotels as they originated in the United States and specifically in the White Mountains during the period under examination. In this sample region, however, they were by no means uniform in appearance, size, interior layout, managerial operations, clientele, and social, cultural, and recreational offerings. Nonetheless, there can be little argument that they were, in large degree, all that the dictionary definitions suggest. Next, it is essential to focus on a few facts about the White Mountain Hotels that will help set the stage for a cursory overview of the Grand Hotel concept as it manifested itself in the region. 1. The White Mountain Hotels originated with the first highway taverns and inns of the 1820s and 1830s, achieving their heyday during the period 1885 to 1910, before slowly but markedly declining up to 1930 and more recently. The railroads did not spur hotel development until the 1850s, after which their impact was dramatic. 2. At the height of the White Mountain Hotel industry, there were approximately 200 hotels, inns, and boarding houses in the region, accommodating 40 or more guests, the largest taking roughly 600. Altogether, during the 1890s, nearly 12,000 people could be housed at one time in the mountains. Indeed, a staggering figure when one considers what physical remnants of the hotels are left today. This number of people produced a significant environmental impact. 3. The hotel industry flourished in the White Mountains because of the district's proximity to the East Coast and its major cities, as well as to the countries of Europe across the Atlantic. Specific attractions included natural beauty, the fascination of the creativity and forces of nature, presumed health benefits, the chance for religious contemplation, opportunities for recreation and sports, and social and cultural activities. Improved transportation, largely initiated by the railroads, opened up the area to hotel development. In fact, a special symbiotic relationship existed between the hotels and the railroads. As one went, financially speaking, so went the other. Extensive marketing undertaken by both the hotels and the railroads attracted numerous tourists to the region. 4. The hotels began their decline toward the end of the 19th century primarily because of changing preferences for the ways that people wished to use their leisure time. A growing desire for personal and family independence, as well as a permanent stake in the region, fostered the cottage movement, whereby private seasonal residences were preferred to the somewhat regimented public sociological fishbowl existence of the hotels. The advent of the motor car and the increased freedom and mobility that it offered economically undermined the railroads, reduced the length and nature of people's hotel visits, and eroded the older practice of the single destination stay of weeks or even months' duration. New competition arose in tourist cabins, motorhomes and motels, and campgrounds as informality and flexibility became the rule. World War I, the Great Depression, and World War II dealt additional crushing blows to an already weakened hotel industry. 5. Like others of New England's 19th century industries, such as textiles and shoes and leather, the hotels and related leisure time activities could be unpredictable and volatile, responding to the peaks and valleys of the national and international economies. When times were prosperous and correspondingly profits high, New hotels or additions to older hotels were built rapidly, in between or even during summer seasons. For the most part, hotel developers utilized the talents of local designers and contractors. Sylvanus D. Morgan of Lisbon was the best known of these, while Eugene Gale of Jefferson was another. Usually, these able practitioners served as their own architects, often employing published design motifs and mass-produced functional and decorative elements. As a consequence, only a few of the hotel complexes were architect-designed in the manner of Hampshire House and the other earlier additions and outbuildings at the Balsams, still successfully operating in Dixville Notch. 6. With the sole exception of Hampshire House, the White Mountain Grand Resort hotels were built exclusively or almost entirely of wood, making them highly vulnerable to fire, as well as prone to deterioration from heavy usage. As a result, most fell victim to burning, while a few others were demolished, no longer economically viable, outmoded, and literally worn out by their clientele. Keeping these important points in mind as contextual background, one may productively review the origins of the region's Grand Resort hotels and examples of this prominent and compelling building type. The precursors of the Grand Hotels, the first taverns and inns in the region, were opened, to quote Frederick Kilbourne's classic Chronicles of the White Mountains, published in 1916, to provide accommodations and entertainment for transient guests, which included tourists and the many persons engaged in commercial traffic that was carried on over certain main routes of travel, especially that through Crawford Notch, the only direct connection between the seacoast and the upper Connecticut Valley. Nathaniel Hawthorne appropriately characterized these pioneering hostelries as at once the pleasure houses of fashionable tourists and the homely inns of country travelers. Eliezer Rosebrook is credited with establishing the first inn in the region at Fabian's around 1803. In the 1820s, the renowned Crawford family acquired and enlarged the Rosebrook property and about the same time erected the Mount Crawford House at Hart's location south of the Notch and the Notch House at Saco Lake above the Notch in 1827-28. Other larger hotels followed along the major roads through the mountains. The White Mountain House, circa 1831 at Carroll, Horace Fabian's Willie House Hotel, 1846, attached to the famous older Willie Farmhouse in Crawford Notch, Conway House, 1850-51, also run by Fabian in Conway, and in Franconia Notch, the first Flume House, circa 1847-48, and to the north, the Lafayette House, 1834-35. It was near the location of the Lafayette House, where the Cannon Mountain Aerial Tramway base station is today, that the first profile house was erected in 1852-53. Later enlarged, this magnificent complex with its adjacent cottages became one of the leading establishments of the White Mountains Grand Resort Hotel Group. The coming of the railroads to the region, certainly the most significant economic development there before 1860, sparked the further growth of the hotel industry. Arriving in Gorham from Portland, Maine in 1852, the Atlantic and St. Lawrence resulted in the construction there of the first of several railroad hotels in the mountains, the White Mountain House, later known as the Alpine House, with room for 275 guests. The presence of the railroad in Gorham also made possible at the Glen, 8 miles to the south toward Pinkham Notch, a collection of buildings known as the First Glen House in 1851-52, chronologically the first of the region's Grand Resort hotels with full guest amenities. This beautifully situated hostelry, under the proprietorships of J.M. Thompson and later the Milliken brothers, became the largest of the pre-Civil War hotels in the mountains, with space for 500 to 600 guests. A wonderfully entertaining, unsophisticated doggerel verse published in Broadside by Franklin Levitt, a well-known mountain guide and mapmaker from Lancaster, provides brief insights about the Glen House. 1851, the Glen House was begun. They worked upon it till they got it done. 'Tis the nearest house to Mount Washington. Thompson built it and called it Glen, and it is kept now by a man named Milliken. In addition to the Glen House, the railroads encouraged the growth of the hotels in or near several other White Mountain communities. These included North Conway, where the first portion of the Kearsarge House was erected in 1861, Jackson, Littleton, Bethlehem, Whitefield, Lancaster, and Plymouth, with its famous Pemigewasset House opened in 1843, later destroyed by fire and rebuilt in 1862-63. As the railroads expanded during and after the Civil War, and the general economic prosperity of the 60s in the North impacted on the industry, a new era of hotel construction and enlargement began. It lasted for the next 5 decades. During this eventful period, the Grand Hotels in the White Mountains reached their peak, with as many as 20 operating at a single time. Each of these establishments accommodated 200 guests or more and offered a broad array of social, cultural, recreational, and dining experiences. In addition, each provided an essential intangible attraction, an ambience of grandeur, luxury, and display conditioned by architecture and the natural setting. A selective chronological examination of this remarkable collection of complexes clearly demonstrates the consistency with which they met this general definition. In 1857, a few years after the openings of the first Glen and Profile houses, the Sinclair House welcomed its first guests in Bethlehem. This event signaled the town's arrival as a tourism mecca, a distinction that it would hold until the 1930s. In an amusing account in the summer newspaper Among the Clouds in 1893, John Sinclair, the hotel's builder and first owner, told of one local citizen's reaction to the construction of the Sinclair House and Bethlehem's economic transformation. Sir Isaac Newton Gay, the old hermit who lived down near the Maplewood so many years, came by one day while I was building. I well remember how the old man drew himself up, leaning on his cane and looking at me in a commiserating manner, said, "Squire, do you think that a house of this magnitude will ever pay in a town like this?" The old man lived to see my modest little house grow to 10 times its original size and 100 times as many visitors, over 5,000 each summer, coming to town. This substantial wooden mansard-roofed structure was closed in 1975, and it burned in October 1978, leaving a huge void, actual as well as figurative, that still exists in the middle of the town. The second Crawford House, perhaps the best known of all the White Mountain hotels, was erected above Crawford Notch in the amazingly short period of 60 days in spring 1859 by Colonel Ebenezer Eastman of Littleton after the untimely burning of the first Crawford House. Enlarged repeatedly between 1878 and 1905, and for a time run by C.H. Merrill of the well-known firm of Barron, Merrill, and Barron, this complex displayed with vernacular simplicity suggestions of both the Greek and Gothic Revival styles. After closing in 1976 and an historic auction of its contents and architectural remnants, it burned in 1977. With due deference to the literary talents of Franklin Levitt, who ignored the Crawford House in his published verse, I conceived this poem in the Levitt vein. Up the notch to Crawford's we ride, over Frankenstein's trestle by Willie Slide. Through the gateway the train will go, Crawford House is quite a show. The columns out front are very large, and a man named Merrill is in charge. The Wambeck, an incredible rambling complex, had its origins in the modest Wambeck Hotel in 1860, a year after the opening of the second Crawford House. Gradually, this initial version of the Wambeck grew to the extent that it took over the entire village of Jefferson, absorbing several other formerly independent hotels. Its principal expansion, in the then-popular shingle chateauesque style, occurred in the late 1880s and 1890s from plans by the later world-renowned architectural firm of Carrere and Hastings, designers of such great monuments as the New York Public Library, the Old House and Senate Office Buildings in Washington, D.C., and the fabulous hotels Ponce de Leon and Alcazar in St. Augustine, Florida, for the East Coast Railroad magnate Henry M. Flagler. The sumptuous main building was leveled by fire in 1926, but the Wambeck continued to operate in its other buildings through 1979. The last of these, the Jefferson Hill House, was demolished in 1993, but 6 adjacent cottages remain, and the original hotel golf course, arguably the oldest in the White Mountains, still welcomes golfers each summer season. Highly representative of the Grand Resort Hotel concept in the White Mountains, or for that matter anywhere else in New England today, is the Mountain View House in Whitefield. With new ownership since 1989, but not currently in operation, the Mountain View was owned and managed by a single family, the Dodges, for longer than any other hotel in the region. This remarkable era spanned the years 1865 to 1979, when the family sold the property. Expansive and massive in scale, with 7 major additions to the main building core between 1872 and 1928, the Mountain View exudes opulence and yet practical functional simplicity and style. Dominated by its central Italian Revival observation tower, this stunning but now sadly deteriorating colonial revival hostelry once offered the full range of social, recreational, and cultural options expected of all the Grand Resort hotels. Although rumors have recently circulated about its possible resale and reopening, its future is undetermined. Jackson's most interesting hotel architecturally is the Wentworth Hall and Cottages complex in the middle of the village. Designed by New York City architect William A. Bates for local financier owner General Marshall C. Wentworth, this enterprise originally comprised over 24 separate buildings, constructed between 1869 and 1916. All of these were designed with some variations in the then-fashionable Queen Anne style for which Bates was so well known. Although only 8 of the original buildings remain, they interrelate effectively and still tangibly illustrate the English cottage hotel planning concept upon which the Wentworth was modeled. Closed during the 1970s and early 1980s, the hotel, albeit reduced in size, has undergone sympathetic restoration and has been open to guests ever since. Of comparable architectural merit was the Mount Pleasant House at Bretton Woods, which, in final altered and enlarged form, hardly resembled the initial building of 1875-76. For a time, the flagship hotel of the Baron Merrill and Baron-owned chain, the Mount Pleasant was owned during the late 1890s by Pennsylvania and New York City-based coal and railroad entrepreneur Joseph Stickney, the developer of the great Mount Washington Hotel nearby. The Mount Pleasant renovations, in the appealing colonial revival idiom blended with other contemporary styles, were the product of design work by Portland, Maine architects John Calvin Stevens and Francis H. Fassett, who for a short time were in partnership. Remarkably, this fragile-appearing wooden edifice outlasted the ever-present threat of fire until it was declared structurally unsound and no longer financially feasible to operate. It was demolished in 1939, but its legendary 9-hole golf course has recently been restored and reopened by the Mount Washington Hotel. Bethlehem's other Grand Resort hotel, the Maplewood, was at its peak one of the largest guest complexes, at approximately 500, in the mountains, and the best example there of Victorian eclectic architecture. The first portion erected in 1876 by local businessman Isaac Cruft, the hotel was enlarged many times before 1920, and numerous outbuildings were added, including a large group of hotel-owned cottages. 3 of these have survived, along with a marvelous casino, designed in 1888 by Littleton architect Edward Thornton Sanderson. Restored in 1987-88, this unusual multi-purpose structure is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. The Maplewood once boasted a deer park and outstanding gardens, but only traces of the former landscaping can be observed today. Demolished in 1974 after several years of marginal business fortunes, the Sunset Hill House, one of Sugar Hill's 3 former Grand Resort hotels, possessed perhaps the most astounding panoramic vista in the White Mountains, from the Franconia Mountains to the southeast to the Presidential Range to the northeast. In its prime, the hotel possessed the wide variety of recreational and sporting options offered by virtually all of its competitors. Built in 1879-80 and later for the firm of Bowles and Hoskins, it was several times enlarged, again in a typical pattern. Of particular note among its many pronounced design features were its tall octagonal corner towers with their pyramidal roofs. The spirit and memory of the Sunset Hill House live on in the annex, built originally in 1884-85, and today operated as a small inn. It is highly appropriate to call forth another excerpt from the poetic works of Franklin Levitt to introduce the extraordinary second Glen House. "I just come up through Pinkham Notch, and to the Glen House I did stop. They have built a new house and call it Glen, and it is kept by C.R. Milliken. The top of the house is painted green and is the most wonderful house that was ever seen. And Solomon's Temple did not begin with the finish of the Glen." Designed in the English cottage or Queen Anne style, this imposing structure was built between 1885 and 1887, only to be destroyed by fire soon after, in 1893. The architect was the productive Francis H. Fassett of Portland, Maine, also a part of White Mountain Hotel history for his role in the expansion of the Mount Pleasant House. Like many of the larger Grand Resort hotels, the second Glen House was nearly a self-contained economic unit, with its own water, sanitation, and heating systems, as well as an adjoining farm for vegetables, fruits, livestock, and produce. Other supplies were transported all the way from Portland by rail and wagon road. The building and destruction of the Metallic, or Nirvana, as it was also referred to, up the Connecticut River Valley at Colebrook, is one of the most fascinating stories in the annals of the White Mountains. The John Calvin Stevens prepared plans, completely intact at the Maine Historical Society, depict this complex as a lavish hilltop hotel, with most of its features common to Queen Anne and Shingle Chateauesque architecture. Unfortunately, the Metallic, started in 1892, never opened to the public, as it was completely flattened by a catastrophic windstorm, likely a tornado, in April 1893, and declared a total loss. The enterprising Stevens, however, reused the major portion of the plans and some of the building materials for the smaller Bay of Naples Inn, overlooking Long Lake in Maine, which was opened in 1899 and torn down in 1964. Another of the architect-designed Grand Resort hotels in the region was the second profile house in Franconia Notch. It was built in 1905 to 06 to replace its demolished predecessor before ultimately succumbing to a spectacular, much-publicized fire in August 1923 at the height of the summer social season, amazingly without a single loss of life. The main colonial revival building, erected and likely designed by Sylvanus Morgan, was supplemented by several outbuildings and 20 cottages of varying designs, collectively constituting a small, isolated village serviced by its own railroad line. Owner Carl Abbott of the distinguished Bethlehem Hotel family, in his popular 1950 book Open for the Season, recalls frantically returning from a business trip to the hotel site the day after the fire, finding only smoldering ruins, the entire Alpine-style community destroyed. Hardly a trace remains today. A selective review of the White Mountain Grand Resort hotels properly concludes with the two largest establishments still in operation, the Mount Washington Hotel at Bretton Woods and the Balsams at Dixville Notch. The massive, beautifully sited Mount Washington, owned today by local interests and undergoing gradual refurbishing, may be viewed as it has long been as a paragon of aesthetic excellence and quality. Designed in a variant of the Spanish Renaissance Revival style, this once nearly self-sufficient stucco-sheathed wood and steel frame complex was developed by the aforementioned Joseph Stickney, owner of the Mount Pleasant House, from plans drafted by New York City architect Charles Alling Gifford, later the designer of the Hotel Clifton at Niagara Falls, Canada. Set perfectly on a rocky rise before the grand panorama of the Presidential Range to the east, the Mount Washington functions as an independent entertainment pavilion, very much in the manner of an ocean cruise vessel. This maritime analogy may be carried farther, as the hotel, Y-shaped in floor plan with its main axis focused on Crawford Notch to the south, seems to move like a ship across the land, its porches and floors suggesting decks, contrasting with its red metal-roofed square and octagonal towers, which, in juxtaposition, root the building in the ground. A National Historic Landmark, the Mount Washington gained prominence as the site of the World Monetary Fund Conference in 1944, which established a worldwide currency and banking system after World War II. Although there may have been two early inns on the remote site, available evidence suggests that the Balsams Grand Resort Hotel originated with Dick's House, built by George Parsons of Colebrook about 1874. In 1895, this hostelry and a large tract of surrounding land were acquired by the Philadelphia entrepreneur Henry S. Hale and renamed the Balsams, with a 50-guest capacity. Over subsequent years, Hale's concept for the site and complex as the Switzerland of America evolved, with major enlargements to the original Victorian core between 1895 and 1918. The last of these, Hampshire House, or the East Wing, was notable as the first all-steel frame and concrete structure to be erected in New Hampshire. The designer of this highly eclectic amalgam of Rhenish German and Spanish Renaissance Revival-style elements was Granite State native Chase R. Witcher, whose plans and related papers survive at the office of the original contractors, H.P. Cummings Construction Company in Ware, Massachusetts. But Hale's vision for the Balsams did not stop with what one may presently see. Had the master plan for a new replacement hotel conceived around 1913 ever materialized on the site, a hotel to top all Grand Resort hotels might stand on the shores of Lake Gloriette today, reminding us of Henry Flagler's immense Florida hotel ventures. Fortuitously, for financial reason, this great scheme was never realized, and the quaint and natural beauty of form, scale, and detail in the current Balsams complex, so appropriate for the scaled-down mountain, forest, and lake environment, might well have been lost. It is the uniqueness of this setting, so markedly different from the vast open ambience of Bretton Woods, that makes the Balsams an equally special place and a fitting concluding chapter in the story of the White Mountain Grand Resort Hotels. It is hoped that future generations will continue to be the fortunate beneficiaries of the foresightedness, determination, and creative talent of men like Joseph Stickney and Henry Hale, their architects, their builders, and their landscape planners. A footnote to the listener. In this article, Professor Tolles refers to rumors that the Mountain View Grand Hotel in Whitefield might be under new ownership. Since he wrote this article, the hotel has, in fact, been thoroughly restored and is currently in business as the Mountain View Grand Resort and Spa.
Bryant F. Tolles, Jr. is former director of the Museum Studies Program at the University of Delaware, where he was professor of history and art history. He is the author of The Grand Resort Hotels of the White Mountains, A Vanishing Architectural Legacy, published in 1998. Historical New Hampshire, the only statewide history journal, has been a regular publication of the New Hampshire Historical Society since 1944. The Grand Resort Hotels and Tourism in the White Mountains was produced by the New Hampshire Historical Society and served as the proceedings of a symposium held by the Mount Washington Observatory at Bretton Woods, New Hampshire in June 1994. The audio version of the Grand Resort Hotels, narrated by John Walters, and produced by Jody Peterson at Cliff House Audio for the New Hampshire Historical Society. Music performed by Colin McCaffrey. The Grand Resort Hotels, made possible with generous support from the Robert and Dorothy Goldberg Charitable Foundation and from Carolyn and Bryant Tolles.